There's been like minor trades. Like Barbario got picked up by Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Did that happen?
Yeah.
Good move.
I was wondering if Colorado was going to be the team to do it.
I mean, I don't even know if I want to talk about this anymore, but like apparently Cam Fowler's untradeable. That's like the biggest joke I've ever heard.
You saw my reply to your tweet this morning?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
It's, you know, because Cam Fowler is a mirage.
Yeah.
And everyone just believes that he's the best player on the Ducks.
Yeah.
And untradeable. And everyone believed the Titanic was unsinkable.
Oh.
And yet it sank.
Oh, okay.
On its maiden voyage.
That makes more sense. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined by Nick and Joe Berger. Back in the studio for the second time this week. I think, I don't remember the last time we did this many in a week.
Early in the season.
It was very early.
Yeah.
We might have still been in preview mode, I think.
Yeah, like we haven't hit this kind of stride in a long time. So I don't want to say we're hitting our stride, but we're hitting our stride. So
we're hitting our stride.
Yeah. It feels good. Things are moving. We actually have some interesting things to talk about. There's not a whole lot going on in terms of trades and player movement just yet, but there's just enough stuff happening to where we can like hash out another episode. The biggest one, of course, by now you've probably heard that Ken Hitchcock was relieved of his duties, of his coaching duties in St. Louis. Mike Yeo takes over, as everyone already knew. He was going to take over next season, but Hitchcock getting fired was basically accelerating that process. So, Hitchcock, he's out.
He's out. They had to do something. It was kind of funny because I was sitting around watching all of this go down on Twitter while I was at work.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Shouldn't admit that on the air, but I just did.
Yeah. Kind of hoping your employer hears this, to be
honest. Oh, yeah. Yeah, come get me. But it was the first thing I saw when I woke up and I was looking at it. And I was actually just about to tweet that.
Oh, were you caught mid-tweet? I hate when that happens to me.
I was caught mid-tweet. I was about to say, the reason this happened is because the Blues can't fire their goaltending. And then Doug Armstrong, in his press conference, I was reading a tweet from Darren Dreger, or one of those, you know, someone from that clique, that tweeted a quote from Doug Armstrong saying, "Well, we can't fire our goalies into the sun. So we had to fire Hitchcock."
Wait, Armstrong said that?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, they're one of the like historically worst tandems we've seen in a long time.
Yeah. I think Dmitry Filipovich tweeted one of those graphs about goalie tandems, and
they're awful.
It's the Blues are just so far to the bottom.
And there's
left.
Not really a big reason for it.
And a couple weeks ago, they literally left their starting goalie at home. They told him to stay home.
If Jake Allen, this might be skipping ahead a little bit, but if Jake Allen can play anywhere near the level that he was at last year,
yeah,
this is a damn good team. But
you know what's funny? I don't know how true this is, but I was listening to, speaking of Dmitry, I was listening to the PDO cast today, and Andrew Berkshire was on, Habs writer Andrew Berkshire, and he was saying that he had talked to some of Jake Allen's junior teammates, and apparently they told him that he was a guy that they could never trust.
Ooh.
In net. I found that really, like, wow. He just kind of casually dropped that bomb, and like it didn't really make any waves on Twitter, at least not from what I saw. But I was like, whoa, that's kind of like, that's pretty big.
That's like, that's very damning.
I mean, I don't know, you know, like they could be saying that now that he's playing poorly, they're kind of jumping like, oh yeah, that guy was terrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we knew it all along.
So it's like, you can't make too much out of that, but that's also kind of like, it's there,
yeah.
You know, it's out there.
And well, whether or not it is true, the fact is he has been playing awful.
He's been bad.
You know, on the score sheet, and you know, if you're analyzing his technique, he's been awful. And when a team is playing from a goalie that there's no confidence that any shot on net isn't going to go in, then they play differently. Like they feel they have to at the very least overwork themselves to, you know, make sure that those shots don't get to the net, and then they're basically taking themselves out of a rhythm and, you know, definitely away from their own game.
And then possibly taking less chances offensively too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, this is like totally unrelated, but like I was on my last year of collegiate club roller hockey. Okay. I hope he's not listening to this, but our goalie was awful. Ooh. Like he was so bad. And we weren't much better as a team. But so everyone knows, in my collegiate roller hockey career, when I started, I was a goaltender. By the last year, I was a skater because I got so fed up with, you know, being goalie. But the first year, our B team was at least somewhat competitive because I was just making a bunch of stops. But this guy, it's like everything goes in. Yeah. Just everything. I don't know how else to say it. And I was playing, so by that last year, I was playing defense. And as a defenseman, man, when you're keeping your gap perfect, you feel like you're keeping up with the guys, he's coming in one-on-one, you know, you're keeping your head on a swivel, you're doing all those things, and then just some wrist shot from the outside goes in. It's just like, oh, yeah. Really, dude?
When you play everything right, and, all right, I forced him to where I'm on.
It's like, I've done my job.
And they shoot it,
yeah.
And you're like, all right, the goalie will handle it. You turn around, and it's in the net.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
It's just like, I did my job.
You feel
why,
like?
Why can't you do yours? Yeah, yeah.
I've contributed. Everyone else did everything right. And when the goalie doesn't make the save that he's supposed to make, it's completely deflating.
And especially in the NHL, where pretty much almost every goalie's pretty good.
Yeah.
To be stuck with the worst one must be like the worst feeling.
Mm. And there's no margin for error.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, they're eyeing Stanley Cup.
And that's the thing, too, because I actually texted you to see if I was reading the analytics right. And the Blues don't give up that many chances, right?
They don't.
Just the ones that they do give up go in because their goaltending is bad.
They can't give up many chances.
No, like, they're a sound defensive team. Like, they've been that way for a long time. Yeah. Like, they've been stout defensively.
That's why they feel comfortable trading Shattenkirk.
Yeah.
Also, which, because they know they're not going to re-sign him.
Yeah, I think that's a completely different thing. But, yeah, I just think, as far as the goalies go, it's, you know, people might not like it, that it all comes down to that, because I'm sure there are things about the Blues that maybe are, of course, are contributing to their, you know, struggles, but at the same time, it's a bit of an ad hoc analysis, you know, because things look bad, it's because X, Y, and Z. If your goalie just can't stop the puck, that's when the narratives get inserted, you know. At least that's the way I look at it. And so, although it feels so simplistic sometimes, like, yeah, the goalie just, well, it just kind of sucks, you know? Because, you know, look at Dallas, okay, for example. Sure, they play a run-and-gun game, right? And that's historically always been frowned upon as, like, you can't win with that style, right? But if you have a good goalie, you're not losing because of the style. You're playing because you have a goalie who can't stop those kind of shots.
Right.
You know, and obviously if you're letting more chances against, that doesn't help any goalie. But, you know, let's say the Dallas Stars of last year have Henrik Lundqvist. Not this year. You know what I mean? Like, that's, then they're going to just destroy everyone.
I mean,
right?
Dallas last year probably could have had Joel Lundqvist and still been better.
Yeah. So all that to say that goalie is so critical. It really is. And when your goalie isn't good, like, it's just really hard to overcome it.
Yeah. It seems easy and simplistic to point the finger at the goalie, but in this case, they've actually just been, like, Allen and Hutton have both not really delivered.
I think that there's a bit of this movement in, like, today's media to be all about the nuance, and we got to make sure that we're not dumbing things down. And I think that's a great movement. That's a great thing to be striving towards. But sometimes you don't want to try to be nuanced just to be nuanced.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can just be as black and white as, like, yeah, the goalies are pretty bad.
Yeah.
That may, like, if that explains 90% of it, you don't have to explain the 10%.
Yeah. And you I think that's what it is, because a lot of times when teams are bad, it's usually a combination of things. It's everything always both, you know, there's always multiple factors.
Fun must be always.
And look at, you know, the Hitchcock firing. Regardless of what you think of his capability of winning Stanley Cup is, he's one of the most, he's like, what, fifth most in wins in NHL history?
He's a great coach.
Fourth, he's one behind Al Arbor?
I think so. So, you know, they fired him, and, you know, the problem wasn't him, but, you know, they couldn't really do anything else.
Again, that's the thing, because everyone's talking, and, like, I think that there might be something to the fact that he is such a hard ass, and people get sick of that after a while.
I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure that has a part to play, but you know what? If the goalies are playing well and the wins are coming in, no one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares if the coach is an asshole if you're winning. Scotty Bowman, huge asshole.
Yeah.
Guess what? No one's complaining when you're winning the Stanley Cup every year.
Yeah.
So, like, the results can be such a, you know, they don't really tell the truth most of the time. Yeah. And that's what I hate in hockey debate, especially on Twitter, is that people get so worked up about the standings. And I'm like, look, the standings never tell the whole story.
No.
Right.
Or, well, they are telling the story, but you're misinterpreting it, you know? Like, Chicago right now, they're near the top or whatever. Like, I don't know if they're still in first place in Central. But that team isn't winning a Stanley Cup this year. Mm. We all know that.
They got bounced in the first round last year.
Yeah. So just because a team isn't first doesn't mean, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. And that can go for a bunch of different, you know, it's like, why would teams really want to be the eighth seed?
Yeah.
Just to be the eighth seed or whatever it is now? You know, like, making the playoffs isn't this, like, end-all be-all.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with teams like the Senators, who every year just try to squeeze in. It's like, you're just holding yourself back.
Mm.
So, I don't know how we got to that tangent, but...
I mean, it is a weird thing to, like, try and map out your quest where you're getting into the perfect seed.
Yeah.
Like striving to get in and be, like, the fifth or sixth seed. Like, that's kind of weird to me. Like, trying to map out this perfect destiny just because it has sometimes worked out for teams in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously not.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, I understand the, you know, jockeying for position to get home ice, you know, because there are some teams, yes. Like, I think the Penguins this year are like 17-2-1 at home. If it goes to seven games, of course the Penguins want to play that seventh game in Pittsburgh.
I mean, even the Vancouver Canucks have a really good home record. It's just that...
But we know they're awful.
We know they're awful. Yeah. They're pitiful. Like, it's a pity party on the road.
Yeah, it's bad. It's great, isn't it? It means they're not going to do well in... Like, they're not going to get as high a draft pick as they should.
They're self-sabotaging.
Yeah, they really are.
And that's where this all... I mean, wow. I don't know how we already got to this existential conversation so quickly. But that's what it all comes down to in hockey, is that do you want to, as a franchise, as an organization, do you want to try to win the championship every year? Or do you just want to fill the seats, sell some tickets, sell some beer, and, you know, collect your earnings at the end of the year with the profit you've made? You know, that's the thing. The teams that... Like think of an Arizona, right? They have every incentive to just be that middling team, because they can't really afford... It's a lot harder for an Arizona to have empty seats than it is a Toronto. Mm-hmm. Toronto can afford this rebuild. That's why they're doing it, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I also applaud them for doing it, because on the flip side, it's a lot easier being the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are gunning for a playoff spot, than it is being the rebuilding Toronto Maple Leafs, right?
Mm.
This year worked out for them because they might have drafted a generational talent, Austin Matthews,
yeah,
and Mitch Marner.
And they're actually getting goaltending and defense.
Like, Craig Custance wrote an article this week about how, look, they might already have their Kane and Taves.
Yeah.
Like, it might already be time to go all in for Toronto.
Mm.
So, anyway, don't want to get too far into that.
They are kind of in their primes already.
Yeah.
So,
it's like, why not just go out and sign some guys? Like, you need the Hossas, you know? Anyway, all that to say that, like, for an Arizona, it's a lot harder to rebuild because you're going to lose, you know, you're just going to lose in the short term.
Yeah.
So again, that's why I applaud them for doing it, because eventually, when you're stockpiling this many draft picks, this many prospects, you're going to become a good team. That's just the way the system works.
Yeah. The thing also about, do you want to just make money and fill the seats and stuff your pocketbooks, mm-hmm. or do you want to win the cup? Winning the cup is going to lead to people filling the seats.
You have to have that long-term, the long game in mind.
Yeah, but you also, I don't know, you need to have the means. If you are going to go for the cup, you need to have the means to do it. You can't be like Calgary was a few mm-hmm. years ago, when they still had Jerome McGinley and Mika Kiprusoff, and they were perennially sneaking into like the 7th or 8th seed.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you have no chance, and you're not really rebuilding.
Well, and that's why... Okay, and to tie this all back to the Blues, because I think that we've made the point here. I don't want to go too far down. But if you look at the Blues, I mean, don't you kind of have to applaud them a little bit for firing Hitchcock? Because it's like, they know this might be their last shot with this group or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, these windows don't last forever.
Yeah.
And if you're not getting results, you have to do something. Now, did they do the right thing? Maybe not. But being proactive isn't necessarily... You know, you can't frown upon that.
I applaud them more for making the decision. Firing Hitchcock,
that's not a decision.
It was a decision that
he cried. Armstrong was crying in the press conference.
It was a decision that was made before the season started. Like, it was announced this was going to be his last year.
Yeah, because he was retiring.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, you know, but you know, he was stepping away.
Yeah,
like it was a mutual agreement. I think this was the last year of his contract anyway.
Yeah,
and they weren't going to rehire him.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, you know, take. Stepping away from a guy like Hitch and going in a different direction because you think you're there, you're like one step away from making the finals, and going with a new coach because you think that's what's going to get you there. I applaud that decision at the beginning of the season. Middle of the season, I understand it. They feel like they should be doing better than they are now. Mm-hmm. They obviously wanted Hitchcock to have one more shot at winning with this team, but it wasn't going to happen. So they needed a kick in the ass, and the first and easiest way to do that is fire the coach.
Yeah, which is unfortunate when it's Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah,
that's why the Kevin Shattenkirk thing is so suspect to me.
It's very confusing.
Because I know
he's clearly one of their best players.
Yeah, he's not a five or a six defenseman.
He's
definitely way better than that. But that's beside the point. I know that it's going to take a lot of money to re-sign him because he's having another great year, and obviously you don't want to lose him for nothing. But they still have a chance to win it this year. I say if they keep him, they have a better chance of winning, and if they don't win, then they should probably blow it up anyway. Or maybe not blow it up, they're going to start to move pieces around.
They already kind of have blown it up in a sense, because
Backus is gone.
Backus, Brower. Even Elliott.
Yeah.
So they've kind of already moved on from some pretty big pieces. It's just, again, if it just weren't for this goaltending situation, none of this would be an issue.
Yeah. I understand the confusion around Shattenkirk, but if you look at it, in sort of similar terms as the Islanders last year with Stamkos, or not the Islanders, the Lightning last year with Stamkos, they weren't sure if he was going to re-sign, but by not trading him,
But is that the issue, though? Is he a free agent this summer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Shattenkirk.
Oh, so they know so they must know he's not re-signing.
No,
that's the thing.
Every article that I've read makes it sound like St. Louis knows he's not coming back next year.
Oh, so then they have to trade him, yeah. And that makes sense. Yeah.
But if you look at it with Stamkos, they didn't know if he was going to come back, but obviously keeping Steven Stamkos on your roster is going to help you win a cup.
Well, that's the thing.
And with Shattenkirk,
it's the same thing.
It sort of is. I mean, they obviously think their number one guy is Pietrangelo, and with the emergence of Parayko last year, they feel that whatever role that Shattenkirk, whatever he was occupying, Parayko was able to do just as well, maybe almost as well. And so they feel that, okay, we know Shattenkirk's not coming back next year. It's not like he's undecided. It seems like they know he's not coming back. So we have to move on from him. We have no other choice.
That's tough.
Well, it almost sounds like it's not so much that he doesn't want to come back. That may well be the case, but it almost sounds more like they just know they won't be able to afford him.
This is the thing, though. Their window is now.
Yeah, so that's why I say keep him, go all in on it this year, and if it doesn't work out, then he was going to be gone anyway.
And they're probably not going to get that much for him anyway.
Well, that's the thing. What are they going to get for Kevin Shattenkirk? No one thinks Kevin Shattenkirk is that good, apparently.
There's a big difference in getting a player like that who once you've traded for him, that he's going to re-sign with you in the offseason versus renting him. And then him just bouncing. People don't want to give up a lot for to get Shattenkirk if they know he's not.
Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. So now, if they're trade him, his value, not only his, the perception of him is already not great. People don't think he's worth that much. And now doubly so, because they aren't sure they're going to bring him back.
Yeah, the thing. A lot of teams see him as a rental only.
If the Blues had wanted to trade Kevin Shattenkirk, they should have done it like a year ago, years ago,
when they first started talking about it.
What I mean? Now it's like you're screwed.
Last year, they didn't do it because they
thought they had a shot.
They thought they were in the position that you're suggesting they'd be in this year. They have a shot at it now, and they did. They made it to the conference final.
So in your eyes, that was the shot. And now they don't view this season like they did last year.
Correct.
Like maybe in their minds, this is already over.
Like you said, they've already gotten rid of a lot of key pieces, starting a minor rebuild. Like they're shifting.
So
their
you
team.
Think they're already rebuilding, and we're just fools? Wow.
Yeah.
That's
pretty much.
I mean,
that's sad. That is really sad, because they can still, if they just had a goalie, and they could still win a cup. In my mind,
they could. Yeah.
I'm gonna be in Blues Island forever. It doesn't matter.
We'll bury you there,
dude. I have been on St. Louis Blues Island, and it feels like forever
since they got Ryan Miller.
Yeah, probably. I mean, like, this is a team that they're very reminiscent to me of the San Jose Sharks the Ottawa Senators, a team that, like,
yeah, and if,
and even the Washington Capitals, in a sense, is just like so good, but just never got to it.
But you know? if you look primarily at the Sharks, they went through the same thing. They went through a mini rebuild, supposed to be a full blown rebuild, but yeah, that actually fortunately ended up not happening.
Well, because they got Brent Burns, which was like, oh crap, we have Brent Burns. Like, we can still be really good.
That was before.
That was before. We're talking about the John Scott year.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, like that's when they were trying to ship off Thornton and Marlowe, and you know their goaltending situation was not good.
Mm-hmm.
So they started that rebuild, and at least attempted to rebuild, and it ended up in their favor, working in, you know, not being that big of a rebuild, and they made it to the finals and they still lost. So, you know, if you take St. Louis and compare it to San Jose, they're sort of entering that phase right now. And, you know, one, San Jose's still there. Two, Pittsburgh's still there. You know, and, you know, obviously, in everyone's mind, the road to the Cup from Central goes through Chicago, whether it's true or not. So, you know, they're seeing it. I think they believe that last year, if they were going to win the Cup with, you know, the players that they had, it was going to be last year. And this year, it's clearly was not working out for them. They do not have the goaltending to win the Cup, and so they're starting that at least minor rebuild.
And yeah, I mean, that's a damn shame.
And I mean, people were saying it on Twitter too, that having Mike Yeo now be the head coach is not just about trying to relight the spark and trying to get them back into respectability so that they can be a playoff team, because they think it's still early enough and that they're still good enough, but they said that it's also potentially about giving him a head start on next season, which sounds like a rebuild.
So Mike Yeo has not proven anything as a head coach.
He proved that he could yell and galvanize Minnesota one time.
Well, that's the thing, is like, is he really the change of pace?
That's the thing. I don't have any confidence in Mike Yeo.
When they said that Yeo was the next coach, at first I was just like, oh no.
This
is going to be such a step down.
And their assistant coaches sort of thought the same thing. Like, they had a couple of assistant coaches, one who went to the Canadiens.
Kirk Muller peaced out because he wasn't going to be the head coach.
Yeah, so it was like, okay, I'm not next in line. And, you know, it's like, he obviously didn't think, he didn't stick around to see if they would win a cup and left.
I don't know. It's too bad because they have a really good core.
Mm.
I mean, luckily for them, they have a young core. Yeah. So, you know, a little bit of a retooling for two, 3 years, they could be right back in 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, I just think now they're going to, honestly, I still think they're going to be really good. I don't see them just falling off.
What, I just had a thought.
They should tank next year.
Wouldn't they love to have Ben Bishop back?
Yeah.
I mean, they could.
I mean, if they can just get a goalie.
He's open to a trade.
Man, I don't know. I don't see them making that trade.
I think even if they had Halak at one point, right? That's where he went after Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, yeah. He went to Washington. Oh no. He was in St. No. Yeah. He went to St. Louis after Montreal. That's where they traded him. That's how they got Lars Eller. But then after that, he went to Washington.
I think even with Halak back, you know, put him on a contending team. You know, give him a.
God, they're
a
so
playoff
dumb
run.
About goalies. Mm. They're so like. I've heard this. People say this a lot. Like every team has a blind spot. Like they just don't know how to evaluate a certain position. I think with the Blues, it's goaltending. Why on earth did they get rid of Brian Elliott? Like, I know it's kind of easy to say now.
Yeah.
But like,
it's because
there was no reason to get rid of him.
It's because he and Jake Allen were basically the same guy, except Elliott was older. That's all it was.
And yeah.
I think the
at the time
the reason at the time. And they actually saw this in St. Louis is Elliott's a bit of a head case, not necessarily crazy or unstable. Well, in terms of personality, but like he requires a lot of mental preparation, for lack of a better word,
really,
to be good. Like he was, I think it was last year, if not it was the year before, where he was sort of going through a rough patch, not nearly as rough as he was in Calgary, and then, you know, Kevin Weeks points this out every time. He went to the Roman Turek style pads, his idol, and then suddenly he's an all-star. And, you know, it sort of looked like the same thing in Calgary. You know, that change of pace did not do his mindset well. And, you know, he fell off again.
I mean, the thing with Brian Elliott is his highs are really high and his lows are really low, yeah. And it's been that way for a long time.
And they're unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Like, it's not like,
I don't know.
You know, you play him a certain number of games in a row and you're like, okay, now he's going to, he's getting a little tired or, you know, whatever, he needs a rest. Or if you rest him because you have to and then you know he's going to start a little slow, that's one thing. But with Elliott, it is unpredictable.
But I mean, for the most part, he's pretty up. Like, he's not down all that much, you know? Like, you don't get the numbers he's put up being that inconsistent. Yeah. Like, he's generally pretty good.
No, you're right. I just think age was the biggest thing, and also, I think the Blues valued the fact that Jake Allen is a better puck-handling goalie.
That is, like, the worst
very
thing.
Very overrated.
That is the worst thing to pick.
No, honestly. It is. Yeah, versus stopping the puck. I know, I totally agree with you.
I mean, like,
I'm just telling you what GMs value,
well,
and coaches.
I think a good puck-handling, like, if you have two goalies of equal skill, equal puck-stopping skill, but one is a better puck-handler, I'm going to take that guy.
Yeah, I am too.
But I wouldn't... If one guy's an awful goalie, but he's a great puck handler, I'm taking the really good goalie who kind of sucks. Like, Henrik Lundqvist is not a good puck handler.
Right.
There's one puck handling skill that is actually, it serves teams well from a goalie, is when they're playing a team they play dump and chase. If a goalie can go behind the net and stop the puck from getting around.
Like, doing the knockdowns. Like, goalies do that now.
Like, that's valuable and... It's actually practical. Like, goalies can do that all the time.
You don't need a goalie to be a defenseman.
Yeah, you don't need to be a defenseman. You don't need a goalie that can make the stretch pass all the way to the opposing blue line.
Well, because they never work. Mm. Like, it's funny because, I don't know, I used to be really gung-ho on puck-handling goalies, and I still am because I think it is an asset. Like, Carey Price is a great puck-handler, but it wouldn't matter if he weren't because he's so good at stopping the puck. Yeah. But I look at guys like John Gibson, who is just an awful puck-handler. Like, just... No hockey sense. He struggles with the most basic of passes.
Does he get a stick lifted and the puck taken away from him like multiple times?
Oh, I don't know. But he always tries stretch passes on the power play. And I don't know if it's the coaching staff telling him to do that, but first off, he can't really execute it because he just doesn't really have the skill with the stick handling skill. But teams always have time to adjust. So you're passing to a guy at the blue line because the team is changing. But really, by the time the puck gets to that guy, the defense has already read the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, so and plus, your team's probably changing too if there's that much room.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like,
There's too much time to adjust.
It's so overrated. Yeah. Like, I don't know why goalies even do it.
Yeah.
Like, because I think goalies, and this is why, like, I think Carey Price has really grown as a puck handler, is because he used to try that stuff all the time. And then he realized, you know what? What's actually more useful is if I just leave the puck for my defenseman or make a little short, like, medium range pass.
Mm.
You know, like the little subtle stuff.
Because if you think about it, the say the if goalie passes to his own blue line,
mm-hmm.
you know, chances are, like, when a team breaks out, they have to break out as a unit.
Yeah.
If you don't, it breaks down. And if the goalie passes the puck to the guy waiting at the blue line, chances are the other four guys aren't really in position to work that breakout.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that play is just not going to do anything for you. Yeah, you get it, you know, to the blue line and, you know, theoretically out of the zone, but, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not going to be picked off or just dumped in right away. And, you know, then it really ultimately served no purpose.
Yeah. So all that to say that the Blues, interesting goalie decisions.
They're in a weird spot. They're just in a weird place right now.
Well, what do you guys think ultimately? How does this play out?
I think they make the playoffs and I think they lose.
So you still have them in the playoffs? Because right now they're on the fringe.
The wild card teams, like, they're
Cause,
like,
because Nashville could reawaken.
They're like, I think the top wild card spot. I can't remember who's occupying it, but I think they're in it by like 5 to 10 points. And then that last one it's like five bad teams vying for the last spot. It's so if St. Louis can get their crap together and make it in the playoffs, they can do all right. But, you know, assuming that getting their crap together means that they've actually...
The goalies play better.
Yeah. You know, so they could win the series.
And that they don't drop off under Yo.
I don't see them making the conference final again.
Yeah, I mean... Well, you go first, and I'll cap it off.
I just don't see Mike Yo being the long-term solution, or even the short-term solution. I don't see him being a solution at all.
look at Minnesota. They suck before he had his tantrum. Then they got hot for a little.
Devin Dubnyk got hot.
Yeah.
Yes.
To be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they started sucking again shortly after that.
Because it was all goaltending.
And Bruce Boudreaux comes in with almost the same group, and they're top of the.
Well, Dubnyk also plays infinitely better.
Yes.
But the thing is, the difference, Boudreaux tends to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, he is just good at turning teams around. Like, he's done it enough times now to where, although the numbers might say, yeah, the Wild kind of seem a bit like a house of cards, you just kind of got to trust that with Boudreaux, it's just different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's just done it before.
Yeah, he's done it enough times.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a thing.
Yeah, so where I would typically say, yeah, this coach is just getting lucky, I give Boudreaux the benefit of the doubt. Yeah,
I think he's earned that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the West is weak enough for...
I just thought about Randy Carlyle.
Hey, you want to talk Cam Fowler?
No.
Oh, man.
Not this time.
Oh, okay.
Not this time.
Oh, not going to get poetic about Cam Fowler. Okay, that's fine.
Well, anyway. Oh, yeah, I have to give my final Blues thoughts. That's what we're doing. I agree with Joe. I think they're going to make the final, the playoffs by default, because I don't really think... I don't see anyone really beating them.
It's virtue of...
Beating them out.
It's virtue of weakness in the West.
And I also think their goaltending has to inevitably pick up.
It's got nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, like, they're even if they just get a slightly better goaltending, they're such a good team that, like, they're going to shine that much more.
Mm. Right.
So, I'm still optimistic. And if they make the playoffs and their goaltenders are playing well, they can beat anyone in the West.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Because the West isn't super deep like it is every year.
Mm.
Do I think they can beat a Pittsburgh or even a Washington? Right now, I would say no. But if they heat up, they can beat anyone in the West.
Yeah.
So I'm still, although things look bad right now, I'm optimistic, but like cautiously so.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I completely agree.
All right.
Nothing to add to that.
I think that does it for our Blues pod.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
Let's not be blue anymore. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, once again, Cam Fowler trade rumors, but nothing really substantive, so.
Yeah.
Although Bob McKenzie said that a source told him that people think that Cam Fowler is their best defenseman, maybe even their best player.
I saw that.
So he's become untradeable.
Untradeable.
He's their fourth best defenseman, which makes him like their like seventh or eighth best player.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Cam Fowler is vastly overrated. He's a good player. He has good qualities, but the degree to which he's overvalued is insane to me. When a guy like Hampus Lindholm, a guy like Josh Manson, even a guy like Sami Vatanen, who I know hasn't been great this year, when guys like that are getting just looked over and unappreciated, while you have Cam Fowler, who really doesn't do all that much when it comes down to it. I know he had a hot start to the season. It just kind of blows my mind.
They should really trade him. Like, he has a reasonable contract, and especially for what everyone.
And he's a good player. And he can help your team win.
Yeah, and you know, clearing up space for the younger defensemen to.
There's just no reason to keep him over the guys they have.
Yeah,
because Vatanen has way more offensive upside. That's right. The thing. And Fowler, he's just got really good legs. Like, he's just really good at skating through the neutral zone. But once he, like, next time you watch the Ducks play, to anyone who's listening and to you guys, watch what he does when he crosses the blue line. He's like one of those guys who you've played beer league with, where the defenseman who loves getting the puck up the ice, but once they get in the offensive zone, they just kind of, like, don't know what to do anymore.
Mm.
Like, he's that guy.
Hmm, interesting.
It's kind of like, remember Ben back on the roller teams?
Yeah.
Santa Clara? It's like that.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
All right, I see you.
That's kind of how I view Cam Fowler. I think he's good on the power play. Mm. I think that he's actually got some good instincts on the power play, but 5-on-5, he's just very limited defensively.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to say he's a bad player, but I kind of have to push back harder against that because people are so fenced into the idea that he's great that I kind of have to sell him even shorter just to get the point across.
And it's like,
you know,
Lindholm is so painfully obviously great.
You don't have to be like a numbers cruncher to look at Hampus Lindholm and be like, oh yeah, this guy's great.
He's double adjective good.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, he's great. And then, you know, Manson, same thing. Manson doesn't have really much of an offensive game, but he's such a just a beast at 5-on-5 that it almost doesn't matter. And Vatanen's the same way. So, you know, if they choose not to trade him and eventually they lose a guy like Vatanen or Manson, or anyone really, I'm not really sold on Shea Theodore, but so we'll see about that. But if they lose a guy like that for nothing, it's just...
It's bad. But
it's just like, come on.
But you know, they have the pieces to make up for him not being there. And then they, you know, they'll only get better because they can get an offensive piece. Because
their defense is already so great.
Yeah.
And so like, look, if you trade Cam Fowler for Gabriel Landeskog, I mean, that is such a home run.
That is a home run. There's no point in stockpiling commodities if you're not going to do anything with it ever.
Yeah. Like, what's the point if you trade, I don't know, Jacob Larson for a second-round pick or first-round pick or whatever, you know? I don't think that they're thinking of doing that, but it's just trade Fowler, get Landeskog, get Duchesne, solidify the next wave of Ducks, you know, franchise history, because right now they don't have a lot going on outside of the blue line and Raquel.
Yeah.
Their veterans are declining
quickly,
sharply.
You know, I think that we all knew it was going to happen. Like, Getzlaff is still putting up the assists. Perry hasn't been scoring this year, but he's still playing well. Kessler's having a nice two-way season, but, you know, it feels like they're all in their last legs. They need that second wave. And right now, up front, they don't have it.
Yeah.
Like, Andre Kosh has a nice piece, but they weren't planning on him being this good, I don't think.
Yeah.
They just kind of found him. And then Nick Ritchie hasn't really panned out to be the scorer that he was going to be, so they need reinforcements up front. And if you can get a Matt Duchesne, a Landeskog, or hell, even a MacKinnon, that's a home run. I mean, like, I can't even... Like, the disparity in talent there is so high, and to get a guy like Landeskog, who's 24, it's a... I don't know what they're waiting for, honestly.
I mean, that's the thing with those guys.
And Colorado needs defensemen, so yeah. It's not a terrible trade for Colorado.
And we'll find out in less than a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, not to make this too much about Colorado, because we talked about them on the last episode, but those guys, especially Landeskog, has really low value right now, but Colorado and Joe Sakic know that he's better than that. And so they're keeping their asking price very high.
As they should, because he's great, and he just has so much value, because he's already signed.
Yeah.
That's the thing. A lot of these young guys, you know, like a Drouin, that's probably why he didn't have that much value, is because you know that once you get him on his entry level, in a couple of years you got to pay up, which is actually kind of dumb, because better get him on his entry level, surround him, make the most of the next 2 years, and then who knows what happens when he actually hits payday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? That's why the whole idea of going all in when your young stars are on the entry level contracts makes the most sense.
It's what the Lightning had to do.
The Lightning did it. I mean, every team that's won the Stanley Cup did that. Pittsburgh, LA, not quite as much, although they did do that to some degree. You know, bring in like a Gabrick.
Chicago did it with their first cup.
Chicago bring in Marian Hossa.
Yeah. LA also bringing in Carter and Richards.
Brian Campbell, because they did win with Brian Campbell.
Yeah.
You know, guys like that, because it's free, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
Because your stars are so insanely undervalued, underpriced, that you can make your team so much better for basically no cost.
Right.
So, I mean, it's even more impressive that the Blackhawks were able to do it three times.
Yeah.
Because
Stan Bowman.
Because even after Kane and Taves, you know, hit payday, as well as the other guys, Keith, Seabrook, and Crawford, they still managed to win another. I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah,
they had all that.
Now they're paying for it, though. Yeah. Because
it was worth it.
Oh, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's easy to bag on Chicago right now, but look, they got three cups in the last 6 years. They're sitting pretty.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they're going to sleep fine at night, you know, filling up the United Center every night, selling the most jerseys, and, you know, kind of bidding farewell to Taves and Kane as they enter the later stages of the career.
Yeah.
And maybe at that point reinvigorate them. But their contracts are, you know, it's like, it's all good. You got three cups, you know.
The sun is going to set on every team. It's just what you do while the sun is still up.
Exactly. And that's why, that's so true. And that's why with teams like the Habs, even the Ducks, I really am a stickler for, like, go all in. Because these windows are so, so short.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, the way the league is set up, your young players aren't going to be on your team forever.
Yeah, especially with the cap.
Once they start costing you. So that's why, you know, Tampa Bay, it's a big shame that they couldn't get it done this year.
Because they're losing a player this year. Like, you know, they can't re-sign everyone.
But you know what, though? I think the big positive this year for Tampa Bay is they may have found out some things about their roster.
Yeah.
I think, without a doubt, Kucherov is the best guy of Palat and Johnson.
Yes.
I think losing one of those guys now doesn't sound nearly as awful as it once did. Because I was hearing about this in another podcast. Like, Palat struggles away from Kucherov, and so does Johnson.
Mm.
And that's kind of concerning, you know, if those guys are all as good as they're cracked out to be. And the year that Johnson was playing so well, he was riding a huge shooting percentage.
And Johnson also is a really good playoff performer. He does fine in the regular season, mm-hmm. but he really takes it to another level in the playoffs.
But so, like, if they can shed a guy like that and, you know, maybe add another piece, because they really have to upgrade their blue line.
Yes.
Like, that's the big, big weakness on that team. This might not be the end of the world this year. They still have another couple of years. Their window is still very much open in Tampa Bay.
Right.
I know it's been a bad year for them, but I'm still bullish on that roster.
Yeah.
Because it's just, there's not a lot of teams in the East that can compete with them.
Right.
You know?
Like, and Stamkos has missed a lot of time.
And again,
he's missed most of the time.
And that's the thing. If they can just ever get healthy.
Yeah.
And their goaltending hasn't been good either.
No, it hasn't.
Bishop has struggled and so has Vasilevskiy. And this was the year that they were going to be able, like, to say clearly, oh, yeah, look at Vasilevskiy playing better. This decision is now palatable.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot harder to say now that you're shipping off Bishop.
Their goaltending hasn't been great since after the Olympics, you know, because, you know, Bishop was playing out of his mind the first half of the season, and then he didn't make the Olympic team, right? He didn't start. And
he did, yeah. And, but Quick started.
Quick started.
And, you know, then after that, you know, he sort of came back down to earth, and then as time went on, just steadily further down.
And he had the injuries in the playoffs, too. And,
yeah.
You know, there have been contributing factors.
So, yeah, I just think the Lightning are one of those teams, too, like the Blues, where it's just, like, things just have to break right. You know, as long as you can keep your core together, keep making forward-thinking moves, all you can really do is put yourself in the best position every year to win a cup. Because, ultimately, you're just not going to win it every year.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the modern dynasty now is X amount of cups in X amount of years.
Yeah.
It's not about getting consecutive ones anymore.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's hard enough to get back, let alone actually win it twice.
The team I'm more worried about is LA in that sense.
Yeah.
Because they have nothing going on outside of their stars.
Yeah.
And their stars are still relatively young.
Mm.
So that kind of makes it better. But they have, if it weren't for a reinvigoration of Jeff Carter, I don't totally know where they'd be this season, because I know they're still playing well.
26 goals for Carter.
That team does not score outside of Carter.
Right.
And I know Peter Budaj's been playing well, and I know they're still great at 5-on-5, but ultimately, like, not being able to score catches up with you at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
The LA is a team I'm kind of like, I'm a bit on death watch, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of having the season that you would expect with, you know, the roster that they have.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, they're still in the thick of things.
Yeah, they're in the thick of it, but they're not, you know, dominating by any means. And when you look at their roster, it's like, okay, that makes sense. Carter is carrying the team. Drew Doughty is playing very well. Peter Budaj has played very well in place of Quick. Yeah. But they've got, I don't think they really have much of a bottom six.
They don't.
When they lost their depth up the middle a couple of years ago, in Stoll and Williams leaving.
You know, Williams has turned out to be a pretty big loss.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, ever since then, they have not been the same team. Like, they're still great defensively. Obviously, Pierre Budaj is doing well. But
it's like Gabrick's not really scoring that much. And, you know.
Yeah. Really, Gabrick's inconsistent.
Yeah. So, lots going on. A lot of narratives.
I feel good about it.
But, yeah, we've talked enough. I think the listeners will like this one.
So, yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And we're looking forward to...
That's always the hope.
Yeah. And we're looking forward to the trade deadline approaching. It's gonna get crazy, y'all. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want to hear more, we are on Stitcher and on iTunes, so you can listen to us there. If you want to holler at us and share any of your thoughts or ask us any questions, hit us up on Twitter @GarageHockeyPod. But until next time, thanks for listening.